Welcome, listeners, to a new episode of Criminal Mind, a brand new true crime podcast that delves into shocking cases that all tie into mental health. I'm Raviv, and I just want to start off by saying thank you again so much for listening to our premiere episode last week. Doing the research for it, writing the script, delving into that part of my brain, it was just something that brought me so much excitement for the first time in a while. I dove right into the research, built a timeline from all of the sources I collected, and then began writing the script. I think writing the script was actually the most fun part of the process, and I also think that as I continue to work on this podcast, the episodes will get more extensive. It'll become easier to piece together each script, I'll have a better grasp on writing it this genre, and with that, I really think that the scripts will get longer and more in-depth. I'm just going to continue with my current flow for now as I settle into this new podcast, and again, if anyone has suggestions for cases to focus on in an episode, please reach out to me on socials at IamRaviv across the board and let me know. And with that, let's take a swim in the mind of a criminal. Welcome to Criminal Mind. On June 24th, 2016, 42-year-old Texas woman Christy Sheets fatally shot and killed her two young daughters in front of her husband. As police arrived on scene, they were confronted by Sheets, who police then shot and killed after refusing to drop her gun. Three lives gone in mere minutes. Two innocent, beautiful girls. Sisters Taylor Sheets, 22, and Madison Sheets, 17, shot to death in front of their father, Jason Sheets. One died on scene, one died at the hospital. Madison shot once, and Taylor shot three times. Jason Sheets was physically unharmed, but overwhelmingly stricken with grief. A father and husband frozen outside of their Texas home. To paint the full scope of this case, I read through essentially every article I could find about Christy Sheets, as well as scrolled through her personal Facebook page. I'm going to get back to that later on in the episode, but I think some of her Facebook posts not only provided some hasty warnings, but also brought on a lot of confusion. More on that later. As 911 calls came into the Houston area police, there were two specific 911 calls made by two crucial witnesses to an aggressive family argument in the Sheets home. Madison and Taylor Sheets. Both daughters made 911 calls that captured the violent nature of a family meeting that was called by their mother, Christy Sheets. According to NBC News, Jason Sheets had assumed that Christy had called for the family meeting to announce that they were getting divorced. Their marriage had been on thin ice since 2012, the year that Christy's beloved grandfather, the man who raised her, passed away. Since his passing, her mental health had been on a well-documented decline. The couple had been discussing divorce, according to Jason, and there had been a disagreement between the two earlier in the day, as well as a verbal argument with her eldest daughter, Taylor, prior to the shooting. Taylor was supposed to marry her fiancé just days later. Jason stated that Christy tried to ground Taylor and prevent her from seeing and marrying her fiancé. I really wanted to find more information about this in particular because there wasn't any clearly identified reason as to why Christy was trying to block this marriage. Of course, it's assumed that she didn't like Taylor's fiancé, but no articles that I read about this case expanded on why. Taylor was 22 years old, a legal adult, and Jason openly did not agree with Christy's desire to ground their adult daughter, specifically so she couldn't see her fiancé. Something about this part of the case is really off to me. I feel like something bigger had to have happened between either Christy and Taylor or Christy and her fiancé because there's just no public, clear-cut reason as to why she wanted to ground her adult daughter. It could have been a control thing where Christy was maybe starting to panic about her oldest daughter flying the nest, or maybe he did something that she didn't agree with. I don't have the answer to this, and it almost infuriated me in my research because that disagreement between Christy and her husband Jason about grounding Taylor is what seems to have set Christy off. Having more information about why Christy wanted to block Taylor from seeing her fiancé would give so much more insight into what happened on this day. As the family meeting intensified, Christy pulled out a gun from a couch cushion and aimed it at her family, according to KHOU. The audio from inside the house, which was captured by 911 calls, paints an even more desperate, heart-wrenching picture. In a 911 transcript reported by The Cron, Jason Sheets can be heard screaming, "Please don't point that gun at us. Please, please don't shoot my family." Other bits of the calls highlight both daughters begging their mother not to shoot. Jason, Madison, and Taylor are all heard apologizing to their mother, begging her to put down her gun. Although the original context of this conversation and their apologies are uncertain, all three family members were pleading with Christy. Ignoring their pleas, Christy shot both of her daughters and intentionally avoided shooting her husband. Despite being shot, Madison and Taylor, as well as Jason, all darted out of the house in an effort to escape the terror. Madison quickly collapsed outside of their home as Christy followed and shot Taylor one more time. Jason continued to run, making it all the way to the end of their cul-de-sac, according to the Kron. Both daughters were unconscious on the concrete in the middle of the road. There were multiple witnesses here, and they state that Jason reportedly encouraged both of his daughters to try and escape. I think that one of the most brutal, heartless, and cold parts of this case is that despite both daughters bleeding out on the concrete, Christy stood over their bodies and attempted to shoot Taylor again despite her gun being empty. She then returned back to the house, reloaded the gun, and shot Taylor one final time. As officers finally arrived on scene, Christy was still holding on to her gun. According to the Washington Post, police demanded that she drop the gun, and when she refused, Christy Sheets was shot dead by a Fulshear Police Department officer. This story makes me completely sick to my stomach. There are still a lot of parts to get into here, but I'm just baffled at how Christy intentionally did not shoot her husband specifically so he could watch his daughters die. The pure cruelty in this intention, which he truly believes is what Christy wanted, is just so mind-boggling. Christy regularly posted on her personal Facebook page about how much she loved her daughters, how beautiful and smart they were. So what made Christy snap? 911 dispatchers were not unfamiliar with Christy Sheets. In the 4 years prior to the shooting, there had been more than 12 911 calls made from Christy's home. Three of those calls were for suicide attempts, and one was for a possible suicide attempt. Christy had also been treated at three separate mental health facilities for both anxiety and depression, and since her grandfather passed in 2012, she had also indulged in heavy drinking. These patterns continued to worsen over time despite Christy being on multiple medications for anxiety and depression and seeing a therapist. As her mental health deteriorated, unfortunately so did her and Jason's marriage. They had previously been separated multiple times. According to People magazine, their crumbling marriage had come to a head, as Fort Bend County Sheriff Troy Nels had shared that on the day of the shooting, Jason had expressed his desire to get a divorce. Despite all of this, there was no documented history of Christy being violent with anyone. Jason never mentioned violence, and family friends that were interviewed all stated that Christy was loving, kind, and a mother who loved her two daughters more than anything. It had been about 4 years since her grandfather had passed, and months later, her mother passed as well. We of course don't know everything that was happening in the Sheets home leading up to the shooting, but it's clear that Christy was not in a healthy state of mind for quite some time. I still wonder though, what finally made her snap after years of buildup? I want to circle back to Christy's personal Facebook page for a moment because there's one specific post of hers that made its round on a lot of the articles I read throughout this case. The post is a photo of her two daughters on National Daughters Day on September 25th, 2015. This was less than a year before she fatally shot both of them. The caption states, quote, "Happy Daughters Day to my two amazing, sweet, kind, beautiful, intelligent girls. I love and treasure you both more than you could ever possibly know." End quote. Years of depression. Years of attempted treatment. Years of alcohol abuse. We know that these were all things that Christy Sheets was personally going through since at least 2012, but it seems like her daughters were a source of light and love, not antagonists in her mental health battle. Her Facebook page is a relic of what could have been a mask, hiding the true darkness that she felt in her body. Her daughters, a prop in her masquerade. She also made a number of posts about her strong faith, frequenting references to various Bible quotes, and her unwavering support of the Second Amendment. Again, we don't know what truly went on inside their home. Jason Sheets has always declined to speak publicly. All we know is a brief synopsis of her mental health history and what happened on that night in Texas. You know, something that I consider to be the most crucial aspect of this podcast is the unfiltered conversation about mental health. The cases that I'm researching bring up so many facets of mental health that I've never delved into before. To prep myself for this episode, I was just browsing through the true crime community posts on Reddit, and I came across a thread that really drew my eyes and mind. It was created by user polishing_bones and brought to focus a documentary released by HBO called Crazy, Not Insane. The user started thinking about how the consumption of true crime media, quote, leads directly to the misunderstanding and execution of the mentally ill. There are so many unwell people we could have learned so much from if we hadn't killed them, end quote. This struck a chord in a few different ways. Again, I'm not a mental health professional or involved in any kind of forensics or law enforcement. I'm just another human who has always been intrigued by true crime media. But in my consumption, I've learned that there are so many factors that play into why a criminal commits a crime. Trauma, mental illness, abuse, often a combination of triggers that are pieced together during an investigation. The question of whether using someone's mental illness as a reason to create the sentence for a crime they committed is always going to be troubling in the legal system. Does the US legal system allow criminals to get away with their crimes because of their mental health? That was a subject this thread brought up and seemed to be widely discussed among users. Do certain people deserve the opportunity for rehabilitation and some don't? If a criminal has been diagnosed and treated for mental illness prior to committing a crime, does that help or harm them in court? I don't personally believe that anyone should, quote unquote, get away with their crime, but I also don't think that mental health can be completely overlooked. It is not an excuse, but it is a reason. I brought that up in the last episode, and it's something I'll probably mention every week because it's a quote that I find relevant here. Some humans chemically lack basic empathy, emotion, and showcase that behavior as early as being a young child. Some humans just simply know how to manipulate their surroundings and create their own storyline. Nature versus nurture. Is the legal system able to effectively tell who is a product of their environment versus what's bound into their DNA? I'm not sure if scientifically society is at a place yet where mental health is properly understood, both in general and in regards to true crime cases. When it comes to Christy Sheets, this is a case where there is a clear history of debilitating mental health struggle. There were efforts to treat her, but we don't know what those efforts really entailed in terms of detail. This case relates directly back to what I found on this Reddit thread and what user polishing_bones brought to the conversation. Quote, "There are so many unwell people we could have learned so much from if we hadn't killed them," end quote. With this particular case, Christy Sheets refused to listen to law enforcement when she was standing over her children's bodies and they demanded she drop her weapon. She didn't, and she was shot. When you tie mental health into something like this that appears to be so cut and dry, with multiple witnesses on hand, I really don't know if there was anything to learn despite what the motive was in killing her daughters and what made her reach that final breaking point. Did she deserve to die too because she killed her children? That's a question I can't answer and don't really want to try and answer because, again, I'm not a mental health professional or someone who is involved at all with law enforcement. I can only provide a personal opinion based on my research. What I can say is that in that particular moment, she was holding a freshly loaded gun, standing over her children's bodies that she killed, and was still putting others in danger. So this has so many layers that we don't know about, but was there something to learn from her in regards to mental health and what causes this kind of breakdown? When it's something of this extreme caliber, I'm not sure if there was anything to learn because she clearly didn't seem to be in a state of mind where she was able to process what she was doing and what decisions she was making. Could there have been something to learn after the fact at another time? I mean, I don't know, and we'll never know. It's impossible to guess if Christy would have ever been able to discuss where her mind was during the shooting or what had been going on for the 4 years prior. But again, at that moment, others were in danger, and the police made their own decision based on an active threat. Another angle here is the US healthcare system and its lack of sufficient mental health care resources. There just simply aren't enough therapists or psychiatrists or facilities to properly care for all the citizens in this country who are struggling with their mental health. That is a whole separate conversation that eventually I'd like to delve into a bit more because it's a sector of this topic that I feel very passionate towards. But overall, this thread really nailed home why I wanted to start a true crime podcast about this particular sector. There is so much controversy surrounding criminals that have a history of mental illness and how that impacts their crimes, but I just don't feel like there's enough conversation about it. Is there a right way to sentence criminals who are mentally ill? I personally don't, and never have, believed that mental illness ever excuses someone from their actions, which of course includes any type of crime. But how are their brains different? And how do their brains impact their decision making? That's kind of what I took from this thread and what seemed to be the basis of the user's banter. I'm just getting started on this podcast. Episodes are going to get longer and more in-depth over time as I get more comfortable with the process of writing each one. So this is definitely an aspect that I want to continue to explore. Taylor Sheets, who was 22 when she was killed, was an incredibly and uniquely talented artist. She had previously graduated from Lone Star College with honors and was engaged to her boyfriend of 4 years. Madison Sheets, who was 17, was about to begin her senior year at Seven Lakes High School. She worked as a babysitter, along with Taylor. Both girls had bleach blonde hair, beautiful eyes, and were the best of friends. Jason Sheets has since remarried and has not yet spoken publicly about that night. I found it interesting that he remarried about a year after he lost his family. He has lived a quiet life away from the media since and married a woman named Monica. I couldn't really find much more on this as it seems she's incredibly private as well, but it's important to remember that Jason and Christy had been on the outs for quite some time. They were separated a handful of times, openly discussed divorce, and to be honest, Jason lost everything in just a matter of minutes. It doesn't come as a shock that he wanted to restart in a quiet manner, regain footing, and try to live the rest of his life with a supportive spouse. I know some people would probably find his quick remarry suspicious and wonder if he was cheating on Christy and that she found out. That definitely could have happened. Infidelity sadly happens in so many relationships and marriages, but I don't think it's fair to assume, and I also don't think it's fair for anyone to potentially ask questions about how he chose to carry on with his life after experiencing a tragedy that most would find unbearable. I keep stressing this point, but we have no clue what was going on in the Sheets family home before this tragedy. He was intentionally forced to bear witness to the deaths of his two beautiful, bright daughters, and after experiencing something so heartless, more than anything, I hope that Jason Sheets has found at least a bit of peace, comfort, and stillness in his life without the presence of his beloved family. Thank you again so much for tuning in to this episode of Criminal Mind. I also just want to quickly shout out some of my current and all-time favorite true crime podcasts that I listen to on the regular. Anatomy of Murder, Paper Ghosts, Dateline, Dr. Death, and of course, Crime Junkie. These podcasts in particular have really paved a path to help me see that this was something I could do. It always felt very overwhelming to think about the process of creating and maintaining a podcast in this genre, especially because it requires precision and accuracy and the ability to examine an event from start to finish. These podcasts and their hosts and creators inspired me to find my own niche in this genre, and for that, I'm incredibly appreciative. You can connect with me on all socials at IamRaviv across the board. Links to all of the sources used to help me write this episode can be found in the episode description, as well as my link tree. Again, if there's any case in particular that you think might be a good fit for Criminal Mind, reach out to me and let me know. I want to continue to explore all kinds of cases in this niche, and any suggestions would be super helpful. If you like what you're hearing so far, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, and share with all your true crime addicted friends. See you next time. Love, Raviv.